Everyone, we're back from another week of devilling on Indie Media Newswire.
Well, you might have been devilling on.
But we've got a new website address for Indie Media because Indie Media has just gone live with new. And instead of indiemedia.org.uk, the new Indie Media address is uk.indiemedia.org. So check out the new site.
And please be patient with it because it's not quite there yet, but it's looking pretty good.
And we've got lots coming up on the show today. We've got all the world news, we've got the global news.
Bit of poetry.
And a bunch of local stories as well.
Yeah, some really good local stories. And now we're going to a rousing track called Bella Ciao.
Oh, hang on a minute.
Today is the anniversary of June 18, the Carnival Against Capitalism, and this is for everybody who was there.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4, bypassing the corporate media machine.
And our continuing poetry section, which actually this isn't exactly poetry, but when I read it on Tuesday night after the police had been tear gassing people in Geneva, it felt like it. Quotes from the Lausanne Solidarity Declaration posted on Tuesday, 3rd of June, after 3 days of massive police tear gassing at the anti-G8 protests. This dedication of solidarity is written by friends who participated in the non-confrontational parts of Sunday's blockades in Lausanne. We are speaking in our name only. As far as the stupid divisions created by the corporate media go, we would definitely perceived be perceived as the kind of good protesters that they like so much to cuddle. The iron fist of police brutality is still preventing us from piecing together the entire puzzle of events surrounding the Sunday blockades of the G8. And yet, the usual suspects are at it again. In the past 36 hours, the corporate media have jumped into their usual role, a campaign of disinformation, criminalisation and intimidation. Sheer urgency precludes the response to all the details of this nebula of falsehood. We have prisoners to defend, lungs to decontaminate, and stories to tell. However, one illusion that needs to be dispelled right now is the ritual separation between good and bad protesters. French national newspaper Le Matin tells us that in a blood-red headline that the Black Blocs destroyed the dream of the pacifists in Lausanne. Have they ever considered the possibility that the two shared the very same dream? Enough of this farce. We want to say the following loud and clear. For us, the only division worth talking about is that between the people of the world and the masters of death and exploitation. The only ringleaders that need to be exposed, isolated, and removed are George Bush, Vladimir Putin, Tony Blair, Silvio Berlusconi, Jacques Chirac, Gerard Schroeder, and the like. Our determination to disrupt this yearly feast of power is matched only by our contempt for that other handful of losers in suits who, instead of fighting for the starving millions of the global south, came to Evian in order to kiss the hands of the torturers. We challenge the corporate media to produce a single quote or soundbite from Sunday in which somebody who actually participated in the Lausanne blockades denounces another participant. All the blockades had the clear objective of obstructing the arrival of G8 delegates. Everybody was agreeing to operate in full solidarity. The difference was only in tactics. A clear dimension that we all had in common, however, was the reclamation of our urban spaces. Whether this is done through a sit-in, a street party, or symbolic assaults on corporate property, we have the common goal of cleansing our living space from its contamination by capitalism and the state. We want our streets back, but we are tired of asking politely. We just take them. To sum up, you can talk all you want, but for us the G8 blockades were a masterclass in revolutionary solidarity. They were the creation of a movement more united than we have ever seen in our lives. We have discovered together that the colours of resistance can combine in a beautiful rainbow if we just try. Let the sounds of samba and breaking glass harmonise, because this movement has something stronger than guns. It has a memory.
And here is the reply posted on the evening of the same day. It says, with love from a Black Bloc activist. Now, I participated in the Black Blockade in Lausanne on Sunday and in the non-violent resistance to the invasion of the Bourdonnais camp. I have just read the messages of solidarity posted by members of the Pink and Silver Blockade on Indie Media UK and was moved to tears. Solidarity is our strength. In the face of massive repression going on now in Genève, you make me feel strong again. I wanted to explain some of my personal reasons for choosing to run with the Black Blockade on Sunday. I have in my lifetime participated in many different kinds of action. My experience has shown police repression and state violence is not a response to violent demonstrations, but to effective ones. I took part, along with millions of people worldwide, in the largely peaceful demonstrations on the 15th of February 2003. I watched as they ignored us and went to war in the name of democracy. It made me sick and angry. It showed that the biggest demonstration in history will not change things if it is just voices dissent. Direct action of all colours is the only way to make change. In Lausanne, I felt that because our actions might be effective, we would certainly be attacked. I wanted to be able to defend myself and those around me. The first police charges were against the Pink and Silver Carnival, not the Black Bloc. The two blocs were clearly separate, acting in different areas. The police fired gas into the peaceful carnival because it got too close to the delegates' route, i.e. because it was effective. Being attacked by heavily armed riot police is terrifying. It has happened to me many times now, and I think you never get over the fear. A black bloc is not the same as a riot. In the looting and street fighting I saw in Genève, the people were mostly local kids. Some didn't even cover their faces. A well-organised black bloc is made of autonomous groups of friends who are well-prepared to take space and defend it with barricades and projectiles, to use the fleeting moment in which we control the space to destroy the property and symbols of the disgusting system we are all forced to live under. This property damage is highly political and usually carefully targeted. I saw debates between different groups and languages about the politics of different targets, stones in hand. Some targets were attacked, others left intact as a result of these discussions. It is right to respond to overwhelming injustice with anger. If these summits take place to the sound of helicopter blades and mid burning barricades and tear gas, it unmasks the real violence hidden by the slick corporate show. It gets noticed and opens political space for ideas to break through and grow. A genuinely surprising number of residents of Lausanne came out into the street and onto their balconies to wave at the masked-up black bloc and accept the free food and cigarettes liberated from the looted shops with a little smile. These people were not threatened by the black bloc's clearly targeted attacks. The parents and children were caught in the indiscriminate police gas attacks in the park. They were terrified, but not of the masked-up black bloc activists who helped them to safety. One small girl gave me a kiss in thanks. Everyone I know who was in the black bloc on Sunday really cares, and that is why they are there. The smashing and burning created by the black bloc is as important as the music and colour created by the carnival. If we just fight and destroy, we will create a very bleak new world, and anti-capitalist movements are strong because they're imaginative and diverse. Excuse me. This is just a stream of my thoughts, and it's getting late, so I stop now. Right now, the battle is still going on, and there is so much to do. I just wanted to add a black bloc voice to the celebrations of the cooperation and diversity of our movement. With love and solidarity, a black bloc activist. Now, you can find that on the Indymedia Newswire to read yourself. Okay, next up is a track by a band called The Stabilisers. The Stabilisers are a new South London band beginning to take the world by storm. And this is a track called Boop. Well, the swear word is, I can't say the swear word on the radio, but it's called Poo List.
Infected, rejected. Such a small mind, such a large brain. Such a small mind, such a large brain. A monkey in a cage, stolen from the gypsies, flew into a rage. But every night at 10 o'clock, he was so clever, he picked the lock. To the doctor the other day, wrote me a script, have a nice day. Now I will take my medication if it don't change my situation. 'Cause I'm in no mind. No mind to feel no pain.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Your radical radio.
Some news about the Argentina tour. As part of a UK tour, the Argentina Autonomista project is coming to Lark on the 19th of June 2003. Neca Jara, a piquetera of the National Movimiento de Trabajadores Desocupados, or MTD, which is a lot easier to say, is coming to share her experience of the vast movement of occupations and grassroots organising and resistance that has swept Argentina over the past 2 years and more. Graciela, a puppeteer, will give a show called Que se vayan todas, about local social movements and Argentina's insurrection. There will also be recent documentaries from grassroots resistance in Argentina, a slideshow, Latin music and food. The Autonomista tour begins in Brighton on the 16th of June and tours the UK and hopefully Ireland until mid-July. And I'll just read where they're going to be and when. Guildford on the 18th of June, 7 p.m, the Hawkshead Pub upstairs. London, 19th of June, 7:30 at Lark. Durham, 22nd of June, 1:30 p.m, the Ustinov Room in Van Mildert College. Hebden Bridge, 25th of June, 7:30 p.m in the Trades Club. Glasgow, 1st of July, 7:30 in Thompson Hotel in Argyle Street. Edinburgh, 2nd of July, 2 p.m, the slideshow at the Forest Cafe. Edinburgh, 2nd of July, later on that day at the Millennium Centre. Edinburgh the next day at 7:30 p.m at CWU. Lancaster on the 5th of July, 8:30 p.m in the Gregson Centre. Bradford, 7th of July, 7 p.m. in the 1 in 12 Club. Leeds, 8th of July, organised by the local EF, and there's no venue yet. And then Manchester, 9th, also no venue yet. Liverpool, 10th of July, 7:30 p.m. at the Trades Union Centre. Cardiff, 11th of July, venue to be confirmed. Bristol, 12th of July, again, time and venue to be confirmed. And then it goes to Belfast and Dublin.
Right, Indigenous activists beaten by police in Mexico. On May the 14th, police detained Carlos Manzo, a member of the Consejo Ciudadano de Uyuni. This is really hard for me. The abbreviation is CCU. According to eyewitness testimony, Carlos Manzo was approached by 8 police officers saying they had a warrant for his arrest, charging him with robbery and deprivation of liberty. 2 other indigenous activists have also been arrested, Luis Alberto Marin and Francesco De La Rosa, also of the CCU. Manzo, Marin and De La Rosa are 3 of 37 local indigenous leaders and environmental activists who have outstanding warrants for their arrests, issued by the Attorney General's Office in the state of Oaxaca. The CCU was formed in February 2003 after a conflict between Union Yahedlio community members and the municipal government over the suspected misuse of funds by the Institutional Revolutionary Party, PRI, Mayor Armando Sanchez Ruiz. On February the 13th, 2003, the mayor had ordered municipal police to fire into a crowd that was demonstrating in front of the municipal palace, killing 1 protester and injuring 9. The CCU immediately demanded the mayor leave his post. The ongoing political struggle has led the state government, known for both corruption and repression, stepping in to support the mayor, issuing arrest warrants on trumped-up charges for Union Hidalgo residents who are active in the CCU. The next day, May the 15th, 300 people peacefully blockaded the Pan American Highway north of the town of Unidago in the state of Oaxaca, demanding the immediate release of Manzo. It's reported that approximately 4 p.m, police forces used tear gas on the protesters and began to brutally beat women and children in an attempt to break up the protest. The protesters had closed down traffic on the highway from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. to denounce the actions of the Judit police forces. Many of the indigenous leaders of the CCU have been active participants in a 2-year battle to stop an environmentally devastating shrimp farm from being built in the area. The community is an indigenous the Zapotec fishing village. The proposed shrimp farm, heavily promoted by Mayor Armando Sanchez Ruiz, would be built on lands that are presently communal. The industrial shrimp farm would destroy the indigenous local economy as part of Plan Puebla Panama, PPP, being pushed in the region by the Inter-American Development Bank. The PPP is a multi-year billion-dollar package of industrial development mega-projects connecting Puebla, Mexico to Panama. For full reports, see www.indymedia.org/front.php3 article ID 320997. If you want to see about other arrested indigenous leaders on the Plan Puebla Panama Highway, see www.asej.org.
And a bit closer to home now. Hundreds of free radio stations off the air. As the Dutch government decides to sell as many radio frequencies as possible, the impact on political and cultural spheres results in more and more free radio stations having to go off air. Hundreds of pirate radio stations will be eradicated because, although many are long-standing cultural institutions on air since the 1980s, the authorities do not recognise them. In protest, radio makers demand more FM frequencies to stay open for free local radio stations and want to legalise up to 1,300 pirate radio stations. Despite the fact that many fulfil important social functions in their neighbourhoods, the economic rewards of frequency commercialisation outweighs the social benefits, and the government continues to actively hunt down pirate radios. In Ireland, like the Netherlands, persecution of free radio has also been rabid, with a recent almost unprecedented... With a recent crackdown on unlicensed Irish broadcasters, unlicensed broadcasting has been a strong independent movement in Ireland since the 1970s, when a court ruled that the broadcasting monopoly held by public broadcaster RTE only applied to national broadcasting. This left a path open for pirate music and community radio stations to evolve. A major crackdown in the 80s saw many well-loved independent stations raided, such as Radio Nova in May 83. Since then, in 1988, legislation was passed to create an independent local radio system in Ireland, with a government-backed body dishing out licences to those they thought valid. However, these stations that did not have licences still fought for the airwaves. Raids in May 2003 by staff of the Commission for Communications Regulation, COMREG, www.comreg.ie, accompanied by the Garda, the Irish police, have silenced many of the remaining stations, which jointly accounted for 7% of the total radio listening in Ireland. It was reported on Indymedia Ireland that 11 locations were raided by COMREG and the Garda on Tuesday and Wednesday, 20th and 21st of May across Dublin. Equipment was seized in 9 of these locations. The Garda press office later denied any knowledge of the operation, but a spokesman for COMREG said that prosecutions were pending. Dublin has had one of the most vibrant free radio music scenes in Europe. One local station, Phantom FM, had a very wide audience, had to voluntarily cease FM broadcasts in Dublin due to pressure from COMREG, but is now broadcasting online. For more information, see www.radiowaves.fm. Also, Ireland Indie Media, which is ireland.indymedia.org, and Netherlands Indie Media, indymedia.nl.
From sea to shining sea, the economy's in the toilet. So what do? You make richer, richer, richer while we get screwed. Banging them war drums won't drown out that tune. Your legacy's soon to be pissed away too. I said, hey, President, don't you kill for me. Don't rule my country and say you did it for me. I said, hey, Mr. President, your name for me. After Iraq, what
your new world order. They hate us from sea to sea. You say you're sick and tired. Who gives a damn? Our boys will soon be down, just like down in Vietnam. And collateral damage will be hard to ignore when it's a monument of corpses. A monument of corpses bigger than Hoover Dam. I said, hey, Mr. President, for me.
Young and toy soldiers, they have family.
I said, hey, Mr. President, don't you mind for me.
These missiles are WMD.
You've got the whole world hating us, burning more flags, you'll see.
Hello, right. Now we're going to hear from Dave, who's usually on our show, but has gone off on holiday for summer solstice to celebrate the summer solstice at the Stones. Now, protest and celebrate at English Heritage's decision to open the monument on the wrong day. This year, free access to the Stones is only permitted between 0200 hours and 1200 on Saturday, the 21st of June. Unfortunately, the solstice is at 1710 hours on Saturday, and the solstice dawn occurs on Sunday, June the 22nd. Campaigners intend to protest at the decision to deny access with music, fun, agitprop, Morris dancing, Seize the Day, Headmix, Celtica, Tarantism, Judge Treth, 2000, DS and Nick Turner, Ray, are some of the performers who have already agreed to play. Campaigners are demanding full restoration of their traditional rights to free access to Stonehenge and provision of land for camping while attending the Midsummer Solstice celebration, which runs from the 21st to the 23rd of June 2003. So Dave, can you hear us?
Yes.
Yay! Hello! And so how is it over at Avebury at the moment?
Pretty quiet at the moment, but it always is around this time. I mean, the interesting thing about the Stonehenge Acoustic Free Festival, which is the protest and party idea, is that the anomaly whereby you have the actual solstice occurring after the sunrise happens every 4 years. It's about the leap year. So this is a regular occurrence, but the important thing is this is the first time this anomaly has occurred since English Heritage has actually granted free open access to the Stones for people. It first started 3 years ago, in the year 2000, where a small number, maybe 5,000 people, were allowed free access right up to the Stones to party and celebrate through the night and witness both the actual solstice and the solstice sunrise. Now, ever since then, it's grown so that last year there was something like 15,000 people celebrating there. And, of course, this year, because it's the four-year leap year coming up, it actually does mean, as you said, that the summer solstice, the actual astronomical time of the solstice, starts after the sunrise, so it's actually late on early evening on the Saturday. So that means people won't actually be allowed access to the Stones, both for the actual solstice astronomical time, but also for the first sunrise after the solstice, which is what many people like to traditionally celebrate. So at the moment there's a situation where the locals are quite nervous because they know there is plans by some people to actually stay and protest. Avebury itself, which is near Stonehenge, Avebury has a stone circle as well, is preparing, and there are stringent security arrangements in place to close Avebury on following the actual solstice on the Saturday. So at the moment, the weather's not particularly great down here. I think the authorities are probably hoping it stays that way. But people are certainly around in the area preparing to try and stay through Sunday to have a party.
So what sort of stringent measures are currently in place to close Avebury?
Well, they're not currently in place, but they have plans to close Avebury if after the actual solstice celebration at Stonehenge. The people have a deadline of, I think it's 2 o'clock, on Sunday afternoon to vacate the public car parks that are provided there. And so the big question on everyone's mind is where people are going to go after they've been asked to leave Stonehenge at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Some people probably will want to stay around Stonehenge to celebrate the solstice. Others may do it on accompanying land. Other people may head to Avebury. So the situation's very unclear, but it's very certain that people are determined to actually stay and have a peaceful protest, and that's specifically why it's an acoustic-free festival. They're not talking about a big techno sound system party. They're talking about acoustic bands in a very, very kind of chill way of protesting, as you might have heard, agitprop Morris dancing, things people say. But there are lots of bands and bicycle-powered, environmentally friendly systems that have said they're coming along for something. I mean, there's also other things that are going to be going on. There are several possible techno parties in the offing throughout the country over the solstice period. In London, there's another Reclaim the Beach party to celebrate the solstice on Saturday evening. And then beyond that, following last May bank holiday successful 3-day techno party near Leinster, which was on this country for some time that ran for 3 days, there are also plans to have an alternative Glastonbury
festival. Wow.
Glastonbury's, the tickets are £100. They've always been quite expensive. But last year, following the introduction of new security measures to save the licensing of the festival, it was almost impossible for anybody to gatecrash Glastonbury Festival. And in the past, you know, you've had numbers reaching 100,000 people actually getting into the festival for free without paying. It was tolerated. Actually became too great. So now it's almost impossible to blag into Glastonbury or to get over the fence.
Okay, Dave, so where is that festival going to be quickly? Because we're going to have to wind this up.
Okay, well, nobody knows.
Hey.
In the Glastonbury area. I mean, there are many websites for people to check out. One of the best, which doesn't really carry the real free party information, but is a good jumping off point, is gilfin.net, and that's GUILFIN.net stands for Guildford Free Information Network, FIN. So that's gilfin.net, and that's a good place to start to find out about this kind of information.
Okay, thanks very much. Have a fantastic time. Happy solstice to all those pagans out there. Ciao!
And to all of you in London too.
Yay! Bye-bye. Hello, you have 120 days to stop banks using your money for the Baku Tbilisi Ceyhan pipeline. On June the 12th, BP formally asked for funding from the World Bank and the IFC and the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development for its controversial New Caspian oil pipeline. We are now in the 120 days of the so-called public consultation period before they finally decide whether to fund the pipeline. 120 days for us to express our outrage and opposition. So join the public protest. There will be at least one major public protest for each month. On Monday the 14th of July at 12 midday, Friends of the Earth will hold a public consultation outside the Department for International Development at 1 Palace Street, London.
Contact alexp at foe.co.uk for more details. In August, Rising Tide will be having a go, and details to follow. Check out their website. In September, the Baku Cheyenne Pipeline will hold a demonstration at the EBRD, One Exchange Square, and contact Baku at gn.apc.org for more details. The Baku campaign is also asking people to write letters to their MPs at the House of Commons London, SW1A0AA, or visit them in their surgery. Feel free to occupy it until you get a suitable reply. And to find out, there are websites where you can find out the name of your MP, but stick with the www.baku.org.uk or write to Friends of the Earth for more information. You can also organise a public meeting in your area. We need to reach thousands of people to build a groundswell of public opinion and public opposition to this human rights environmental disaster, so please help. The campaign can send speakers. Call 01865 200 550.
And an update on Genoa, update to the legal proceedings for the murder of Carlo Giuliani closed on the afternoon of May the 5th. The judge, Elena Dallasio, decided the inquiry against Mario Palascencia, I don't know if I've got the pronunciation right, the policeman of the Italian paramilitary police, Carabinieri, who shot Carlo at the G8 summit protests, is closed. The reason why this murder won't be prosecuted is not only the claim of self-defense by Palascencia, but also because of Article 53 in the Italian Criminal Code. This is a case of legitimate use of firearms. This may constitute a possible and dangerous legal evasion for similar situations in the future. Murder, whilst on duty, is legitimised by the courts by this legality. And the policeman concerned is going to be completely acquitted. Full feature on www.indymedia.org. Now, the Swiss consulate in Barcelona has been occupied as of Monday, or actually, as of Friday. The consulate in Barcelona was occupied to protest against the repression at the G8 in Evian, and the cutting of the climbing rope of Martin Shaw by the police, resulting in a fall of 20 metres and serious injuries. By Monday, after 80 hours, the protesters were still hanging from the building. Their hanging abseiled halfway down and stayed there and hung a huge banner on the front of the building, despite the temperatures around 40 degrees centigrade. And we're planning to stay put until the Swiss government shows their willingness to discuss the opening of an independent investigation into the repression around the G8. More info on Barcelona Indymedia. As far as I can work out, they're still there today, and I think there's another demo planned this afternoon or this evening.
Right, news from Palestine. The Israeli occupying army stopped a Palestinian medical relief ambulance at gunpoint last Saturday. The soldiers got into the ambulance and forced the team at gunpoint to drive around the village. The soldiers used the cover of the ambulance to try and arrest people. After 20 minutes, the ambulance team refused to carry on and announced they would rather be shot than forced to help the soldiers arrest the villagers. The soldiers threatened them by saying that if the ambulance team revealed that the soldiers were in the ambulance, then they would shoot them. The soldiers also confiscated the identification cards of the ambulance team. Since yesterday, the ambulance team have not been given their IDs back, despite numerous appeals being made to the army by Israeli physicians for human rights. Without their IDs, the team are unable to function. According to this report, the Israeli army also arrested Palestinian medical relief doctor Dr. Nadim Barghouti and Dr. Yunis Dahoud, deputy mayor of the village. Both were arrested whilst in their homes. The army also blew open the door of the Palestinian medical relief clinic in Deir Gassina. Besides exploding the door, they destroyed one of the walls and created a lot of destruction in the clinic. Palestinian medical relief calls on all humanitarian, human rights and health organisations to condemn these deplorable actions, which violate the principles of medical neutrality. The organisation asks that people demand the release of Dr. Nadim Barghouti and Mr. Yunis Dahoud, demand the return of the IDs to the ambulance team, and compensate the Palestinian Medical Relief Clinic for all the damage caused. Palestinian Medical Relief severely condemns these attacks as they constitute a gross violation of international law. They call it a clear provocation by the Israeli occupying army, who have already attacked Palestinian Medical Relief Clinics in Nablus, Ramallah, Gaza and Jenin. Now we have a track. It's the Stabilizers again. Last time we played Addicted, not, as I was going to say, poo list, but it's a rude word. It's not really called poo list. So next up with the Stabilizers.
Can you believe this? We're on the shit list. Terminally tired, perpetually pissed. Cause this opportunity knocked you right off your feet. Getting victimized, don't it fill your heart with sorrow? And if someone feeds you bullshit, do you spit or do you swallow? Can you believe this? We're on the shit list. Terminally tired, perpetually pissed. Cause missed opportunity knocks you right off your feet. Blistered and bleeding, left dead in the street. It's just a phase, just one of those days. It's just a game, now you're in the frame.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4, bypassing the corporate media machine.
20 on trial for anti-war protest. Press release from Voices in the Wilderness UK. 20 to stand trial for anti-war protest. Defendants to use case to put invasion of Iraq on trial. This coming Tuesday, at 10 p.m, Hemel Hempstead Magistrates Courts will see 20 people from around the country stand trial for blockading the entrances to Britain's military nerve centre in Northwood during an anti-war protest in January. 60 people were arrested at the protest on January the 19th, which closed the main entrance to the base for 8 hours. Almost all were charged with obstruction of the highway. The trial comes as evidence continues to mount that the British government distorted pre-war intelligence reports to exaggerate the threat posed by Iraq, and UNICEF warns that Iraqi children are suffering alarmingly high rates of diarrhea and related diseases as a result of the invasion and its chaotic aftermath. Defendant Gabriel Carlyle, 29, from London, said, "This was an illegal and immoral war driven by the greed and arrogance of powerful men happy to gamble with the lives of millions of people. Over 5,000 civilians were killed, and the aid agencies are now predicting that Iraq's children face a summer of diarrhea as a result of the chaos caused by the war. With many more innocent lives lost, I intend to use this trial to put the British government in the dock where it belongs." For more info about Northwood, see www.j-n-v.org.
Okay, and yes. Gloucester Crown Court, Friday 20th of June at 10 a.m. 10 defendants will plead lawful excuse for doing or attempting criminal damage at RAF or USAF Fairford, Gloucestershire, UK, in the lead-up and during the bombing of Iraq, on the grounds that war on Iraq was making their actions or attempted actions legal. The defendants are charged with doing or attempting to do criminal damage to Perimeter Gate at the base or the B-52s and vehicles within it. Before any of these cases can proceed, the judge at Gloucester Crown Court has recognised the need for a pronouncement on the legality or illegality of the war. This is the first time a UK court will have to make a ruling as to whether the war was legal or illegal. And continuing the bases theme, USAF Fairford and Menwith Hill on 4th of July 2003, that's where you should be. Also inclined are warmly invited to converge on the US bases in Fairford or at Menwith Hill to celebrate UK independence from America. There will be speakers, music, dancing and general frivolity. Gatecrashers welcome. The suggested dress code is black tie, ball gown, mask and sturdy boots. And guests are invited to bring whatever they feel they need to do justice to the occasion, be it fancy dress, sound systems, Morris dancers, street theatre, sandwiches, fairy cakes, samba bands, ladders and the like. But they're also reminded that this is to be a 100% peaceful event and that the land on and around the base must be respected at all times. Fairford, for your information, was the forward deployed European airbase for 14 B-52 bombers and their lethal cargoes in spring 2003, as well as during attacks on Kosovo and the First Gulf War. Menwith Hill. Bit of news from Menwith now?
Menwith. Yeah, go for it.
Last weekend, under the ever-watchful eyes of police from several constabularies and our own trust MOD trustees, a group of women gathered in Yorkshire in continued opposition to the activities of US spy base at Menwith Hill. The British government is allowing bases at Fylingdales and Menwith Hill in North Yorkshire to be used by the US as part of a national missile defence system. National missile defence allows the US to launch a nuclear attack on another country without fear of retaliation. The system is central to the US agenda of escalating military aggression against other countries. It contravenes international law, is exacerbating international destabilisation, and is leading to a global arms race. The use of these bases puts Britain in the front line of retaliatory fire, yet affords Britain no protection whatsoever. This peace camp gave women the opportunity to come together to campaign against the US war drive and Britain's role in it. Events included a tour of the base, anti-war discussions and a march and a protest at the base. Throughout the weekend, the police filmed us, followed us and guarded us for our own protection as we put up tents, gathered flowers, endangered orchids, I'll have you know, went to the loo and in a very English way expressed our profound displeasure at the presence of their big balls in the glorious Yorkshire countryside. A group from Sweden who chalked slogans on the road and wove flower garlands elicited special attention from the bobbies on their beat, who, as we slept, the police kept watch, thoughtfully sending an airborne observation device to noisily circle the camp at 3 a.m. It's a peace camp that runs continuously and will be participating in the 4th of July celebrations that I spoke about.
And news from another camp, No Border Camp in Timișoara. OK, since last Monday, the 9th of June, a first Romanian No Border Camp takes place in Timișoara, near the Hungarian and Yugoslavian border. The leaflets and invitations of this No Border Camp are focusing on the question of free movement, especially the geopolitical situation of Romania as a state, which applies for membership in the European Union, makes them dependent on accepting and executing the European migration laws in advance. Ready to listen to an interview with one of the organisers, or is that coming up later?
No, that's coming up in about
All right.
5 minutes.
Well, that'll be coming up in 5 minutes. Sorry about that there.
Do the nude cyclist.
Yeah, nude cyclist. Okay, third naked cyclist demonstration, my God, in Zaragoza. Okay, this is the third time this demonstration takes place. Due to the success of the past two gatherings, I bet they were successful, 2001 and 2002, this year they want to go further. They've decided to spread the call worldwide and invite everyone to join in. 20 people is enough to do it. We'll cycle with no clothes on through the centre of Zaragoza, as they have done for the last 2 years. This is the first time they've announced it beforehand. It's a defiance to the established power and a bet for civil disobedience. Stop the dependence on oil, they say. Down with pollution. Down with the textile industry. Naked in front of traffic against oil and car dictatorship and its wars. Reclaim the streets for the people. This event will take place in Zaragoza on Thursday, the 12th of June. And they suggest you do it in your own city on the same date or as near as possible. It's fun and generates social debate. I bet it does. It's a call for the... Oh, my God, my Spanish is abysmal. It's a call for the coordinadora de colectivos ciclonudistas. De Aragon, CCC. That is part of the... Ooh, it says... It says a rude word here, so I'll just say Effin Clothes World Association. For more info, write to email cyberloren28@mixmail.com. More info, public and international call to action. Okay, now what?
there's a little thing about Thessaloniki, which starts on the 19th, which is tomorrow. Greek government is presently running the presidency of the EU. This year's EU summit starts tomorrow in Thessaloniki and meets until the 21st of June. As in previous years, people were gathered to demonstrate against the summit. The Greek Social Forum, an umbrella of leftists, NGO, trade unions and students, is calling for a demo about immigration in the centre of Thessaloniki on the 19th. On the 20th, they are going to Chalkidi. I don't know if that's the right pronunciation, but Saturday they're back again demonstrating in Thessaloniki in the city. Struggle Initiative Thessaloniki 2003 has set up a camp in the university campus in the centre. The anti-authoritarian movement Salonika 2003 are also camping at the university. They're organising an anti-authoritarian festival. The platform Action Thessaloniki 2003 are preparing conferences and demos. Indymedia Thessaloniki is reporting in English, so go and have a look at more comprehensive reports about that. Part of the university has already been squatted. It is housing the Independent Media Centre and the medics.
Hooray! Right, we're going to say goodbye now. We're going over to the interview with one of the organisers of the No Border Camp in Timisoara. Good luck, everybody in Thessaloniki, because it's going to be pretty mad, I think. So we all want to say goodbye, good luck, goodbye. Happy solstice. Goodbye.
Bella ciao.
Bella ciao. Hooray. Goodbye from Indymedia, UK, London lot. Bye.
We're sitting right here beside the border camp in Timisoara, in the middle of the forest. Next to me there's Tavi, who is one of the organizers of this whole camp, and I'm going to ask him some questions about the camp itself and some more. So, Tavi, this is, as far as I know, the first no border camp which takes place in Romania. What about this special situation here, or why in Romania?
There are several reasons for doing this, and yeah, we could start about the new countries that will enter in this summer, EU, and the moving of the borders. So then now the Romania is at the border with the European Union. This was one of the reasons. Then the second reason was like a lot of the growing number of articles and reports about Romanians who migrate illegally to or whatever countries in Western Europe. And the next thing was that it also recently appeared this season working and like the situation with Romanians who go on strawberry plantation in Spain to work there. Mm-hmm. This was like some of the reasons that were like making us here, and on the airport, and then it's also the involvement of Tarom, the Romanian airlines, into deportation.
Mm.
Some of the things that made us do this, and also to be used as a presentation of things happening here in Romania for Western people, whatever, to try to work for better cooperation in the future.
Okay, what about the situation in Romania at the non-European borders?
Because there is Bulgaria, there is Serbia, there is the Republic of Moldova, and there is Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different things. And until now, for example, Serbia has been used for some time as a point for going out of getting of Romania.
Mm-hmm.
And now the situation has changed, and there are less people who are, there is not so much importance on this, because people will not live through that part.
Mm-hmm.
And in the south there is Bulgaria, who has the same status as Romania, which and it's not a similar thing, but it is hard for people to go that direction, because it's also used for people who go to work in Greece. And about Ukraine, and I know that the border with the Republic of Moldova, the Romanian government received a lot of money of strengthening this.
Mm.
And there are also some laws who make it harder for Romania people from Moldova to get Romanian papers.
So, Tavi, about this demonstration which takes place on Saturday, what is the focus of the demonstration?
It will be street party combined with messages related to migration.
Mm.
And migration put also in the context of how it affects Romania and Romanian people.